Carnegie Avenue in Niles, Ohio. The interview is for the Youngstown State University Oral History Department. The topic deals with the development of Niles and its police department. I'm going to focus in on the Ku Klux Klan riot of 1924 later in the interview. Mr. Giacola, can you tell me when and where you were born, first of all?
I was born on Fenton Street, March 18th, 1917, in Niles.
How many brothers and sisters did you have?
Two brothers and four sisters. Mm-hmm.
Did you live on Fenton Street all your life?
No. I lived on Fenton Street for several years, and then my dad built a home on Heaton Avenue, and we lived there for several years, and then we left there and went to Youngstown.
Where's Heaton Avenue?
That's Federal Street now.
Can you tell me how it came to be that an Italian family at that time lived on Federal Street when most Italians lived on the East End?
Well, my dad wanted to move. We sold our home on Fenton Street, and he bought these two lots on Heaton Avenue, which is Federal Street. And he built a home, and we had no problems. They were nice people, nice neighbors. We had a Jewish neighbor, and several others, I don't know, they weren't Italian, but they were nice neighbors.
Mm-hmm. Did you go to Niles High School?
Yeah.
Who were some of your friends there? Can you remember who you ran around with?
Oh, used to be a councilman.
How long ago?
Years and years ago. Mm. Boy, I'll tell you, I have problems with names.
Any of them still around? Any of the guys?
Oh, yeah.
Who were some of the teachers you liked?
Well, I never had any problems in school. All the teachers were okay. I'd done real well in school. As a matter of fact, when I first started school in Roosevelt School, I never made the fifth grade. I went from the fourth to the sixth. So I never had any problem in school. I'd done real well. And the teachers were fine, all of them.
When did you graduate from school?
Well, I quit in the 11th grade, and then about a year later, I went to the Board of Education on Wood Street in Youngstown and took a special exam and graduated. This was way back in, I think, 38.
Mm-hmm. Through the years that you were in high school, and even younger than that, how did your father raise six children, six or seven of you?
Seven.
During the Depression, what did he do?
Well, my dad was a boiler engineer at the Youngstown Sheet and Tube. And we had a big garden, and we raised our food, really. If we had meat once a week, it was a delicacy. Mostly out of the garden we ate. My brother and I used to come home from school and carry water to water the plants. There was no hoses, too much money. Didn't buy a hose. So we carried water by the buckets full. And we got along fine. We never had to ask anybody for anything. Mm-hmm. And my dad when everybody got laid off at the mill, he worked 1 or 2 days a week, but he didn't get paid. He got script to go to the sheet and tube store, and we bought our staples there.
After you got out of high school, you took your test, and you graduated with a diploma in 38. What did you do?
Well, there weren't any jobs. So I got a job selling house to house with Hoyt's products. And it wasn't very lucrative or anything, but I made about $7, $8, $10 a week, which was big money. Then my brother and I went down to Mosquito Creek, and we used to trap muskrats, skin them, put them over a board and saw them down, get $1 a piece for them. And there used to be a place on Main Street called King's Grocery. We used to go out and catch frogs and take the legs off and sell them to this King's Grocery. He in turn sold them to some, you know.
What's at that place now where King's Grocery was? What's another
There's
location?
Nothing there.
What's near it?
It's on Main Street. It's not very far up. But I don't think there's anything there now.
Just an empty lot?
Hmm?
An empty lot, you mean?
No, just an empty building.
Okay. What happened up to the point of the war years? What did you do then?
Well, I went to work in the sheet and tube in the hot gang, which was labor. And we used to clean the flues, you know, underneath the, down underneath. And I worked there for some time and then got laid off. Made $3.76 a day. A day.
Not very much by today's standards.
No, but it was appreciated, I'll tell you.
What happened then?
Then my brother and I, we painted a dairy in Girard. We painted the whole interior. Big dairy. It's not there anymore. And we didn't get paid. They gave us free milk for 2 months. In other words, what we were trying to do was just make it on our own. Mm-hmm. And we didn't do too bad. We ate well, vegetables, I mean, you know, very little meat. We ate well, and we lived well, considering.
What'd you do when the war started?
Well, when the war started, December the 7th, they bombed Pearl Harbor. December the 8th, I went down to the post office and enlisted. Came back home and told my mom, I says, I'm leaving at 1:30. I went down to...
How'd she take that?
She didn't like it. I didn't tell her anything. It was a shock. But anyway, I went down to Columbus. I forget the name of the place where they swore me in. Then I went to radio school at Scottsville, Illinois. And when I graduated from there, I volunteered for what at that time was called an X mission. I went overseas in New Guinea. And we carried on these bombing raids for several months. So one day, I had a hemorrhage of the stomach. And they flew me into Brisbane, Australia, took one look at me, kept me there for a couple of weeks, and they says, "You're going home." So they sent me back to the States, and Letterman General Hospital in San Francisco. And when I got there, they asked me if I would be willing to go to, since I had combat experience, if I would be willing to go to an officer's training school. And I said, yeah. So they held some conferences and stuff, and they says, "No, we can't do it. You can't make it. You can't be in the service." So they discharged me. They sent me home, and that was it. Incidentally, they sent me home telling me I couldn't work. And I got a big 10% disability. I never questioned it, nothing. So I was home about 3 or 4 months, and I got real sick. I hemorrhaged again. So they took me back to the hospital, the Cryo Clinic, the Cryo Veterans Hospital in Cleveland, and decided I need an operation. So they took 90% of my stomach out. Then they sent me home with 100% disability, which at that time was $138 a month. Short time later, they cut me to 60. I never questioned it. Then they cut me to 40. I still never questioned it because I was working. I don't mind telling you, I'm very, very disappointed. I may be 66, but I'm capable of working, and I'm in demand in the automobile business. But I can't work because of this thing, you know, with the complications that set in. And I applied for an increase in compensation. And I waited 15 months, and they turned me down. So needless to say, you know how I feel about the United States government's obligations to veterans.
Right. When you were in New Guinea, what was it like? How much time did you spend there?
About a year.
Hot?
Hot, very hot. You would get sudden showers that out of a big sunny sky, it would all of a sudden cloud up and you get showers. And then just as suddenly, it would stop and the sun would come out and the steam would rise. Boy, it was steaming hot.
Did you go on the bombing missions?
Oh, yeah. I made every bombing mission. I never begged off one. Some of the fellas had an ache here and an ache there, you know. But everyone that was scheduled for me, I went on.
Where did you go to? Where did they hit?
Pardon?
What areas did you bomb?
Mostly Buna Bay.
Who's that at?
We used to bomb every day at noon. You see, with a B-25, you were a sitting duck if you went up at night because they could see you, you know, the exhaust. So all our bombing missions were in daylight. And we tried to cross our target at noon every day. And if I'm not mistaken, I made something like 26 or 27 bombing missions. Now, I could be wrong. It could be a little more than that, but that's being conservative.
Where's Buna Bay?
In New Guinea.
I see. I want to go back a little bit to your childhood. Do you remember the Ku Klux Klan riot in 1924?
Yeah.
What do you remember about it? How did you see it? What were the circumstances about it?
Well, I was very young. I would imagine I was about 14. And as I recall, the Ku Klux Klan was going to march through Niles. And Niles says, okay, but you don't wear your hoods. But they insisted on wearing hoods. And there was an outfit in Niles called the Flaming Circle. They were bound and determined they were not going to march through Niles with their hoods. And it got to be pretty rough. As a matter of fact, we had martial law. But I remember one instance over in front of Jennings on Mason Street, mm-hmm. where they shot three of them dead right there in the middle of the street. Somebody did, I don't know who.
Did you see it?
No, I didn't see it, but, you know, I remember it. And I also remember when I lived on Heaton Avenue. I was out playing in my wagon. And you know how you put your one knee in the wagon and you go? Well, there was a place there called Crook's Gas Station. That's where that insurance company is now.
Frazzles.
And I'm going up the sidewalk. Somebody came along and started shooting right over my head into the Crook's gas station.
Into the gas station?
Yeah. And needless to say, I got out there in a hurry.
Was he a Klanner or?
No, I don't know. I think the shots were misdirected. I don't think they had any reason to shoot there. They just, one of those things, they were shooting and...
Mm-hmm. What else did you see?
Well, I saw tires that were, must have been soaked in gasoline or something and set on fire and rolled down Robbins Avenue. And every once in a while you'd see a flaming cross. Somebody would set a cross up and set it on fire. And this went on for several days.
Before the riot?
Yeah, and then National Guard came in, put under martial law. And after that, things were pretty quiet.
Did you see the riot itself?
Well, yes or no, I don't know. I saw quite a bit of it. Whether I saw it all or not, I don't know.
What was it like? What did you see?
Well, there was a young fellow from Niles who was home on leave from the Navy who had a Model A with one of those trunks on it, you know? And he took the deck off near the door, mounted a machine gun, and he went around shooting up everything.
You saw that?
Oh, yeah.
How did he get a machine gun?
I don't know how he got it, but he got it.
That's who it was.
Hmm?
I've heard that, but I couldn't find out who it was.
Yeah, I don't know who the fellow was. Just a young fellow, home from the Navy. Could be.
He was... Okay.
Could be.
Do you remember anything more about this person with the machine gun?
Well, I don't really remember him. But I remember some of the things that were done. They were running around Miles with this machine gun on the... And I don't know, really, whether they were the ones that shot those three Ku Klux Klans in front of Jennings or not. Somebody shot them. And it might have been them. I don't know.
What else did you see?
Well, that's about it, except... the National Guard moving in, and you had to be off the street at dark.
How many people were at that intersection that day of the riot?
Oh, I don't know, Steve. I don't really know.
Did you see did you happen to see any attempts by the Klan as they try to break through the intersection to go into town?
No. No, I think they were pretty well convinced they weren't going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
See, when they came in here, now, in all fairness, Niles was not, did not object to them coming in the Niles. But they did object to them wearing their hoods. And, of course, the Klan insisted that they wear their hoods. Well, this is what caused all the trouble.
Did you know any of these people in the Klan?
No. No, I didn't know any of them.
Who were some of the leaders of the Flaming Circle?
Well, I'll tell you, that's a good question. I don't remember. You know, it's been... 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly don't remember. Some of the old families from Niles, you know. And they were really, well, Niles has always been a very close-knit town. And some of the people that were against this thing, they felt very, very strongly about it. But I don't remember who they were. You know, I was just a kid.
Did part of it deal with the church?
Pardon?
The church. Did it have an influence on people? I don't mean did the priests go out and wave a flag, but
no,
did the religion of the people, you know, the strong belief and so forth, the way that people were so tightly associated religiously and
now,
the cross burnings.
I don't remember anything that the church done to try to influence anybody.
Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm getting at, though. Let me ask it this way. When the people saw the crosses that were burning, did they associate the burning crosses with their church, an attack on their church?
Well, they probably did. But as far as the church was concerned, I don't ever remember of them saying anything, you know, a public objection or anything. And I mean it, I belonged to Mount Carmel. Well, I was baptized there, confirmed there, made my first communion there. So, you know, I've been a member of Mount Carmel for many years. And I don't remember one incident where they come out to condemn anybody. But I'm sure that the people resented the burning of crosses and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they more or less took it upon themselves to take care of it. They were going to stop it.
What effect did the riot have on Niles afterward?
Well, After it was all over and martial law was taken out, I don't think it had any effect. I think Niles settled down real well after they were out of here. And I don't think that there was any repercussions. Oh, there might have been some talk, you know. Naturally, there would be talk about what happened and everything. But I don't think, I think Niles settled down real well.
Is this a situation that people talked about a lot afterward? Or did they try and forget it?
Well, no, I would imagine then they talked about it considerably, you know, for a while. But then it just faded out. Just faded out and was completely forgotten.
I want to move to another topic also, and that's the bootlegging era. When did you go to Youngstown?
I think 38.
Okay. Do you remember anything about bootlegging, anything like this as a kid? Did you ever see or hear anything about it?
Well, I remember saloons, speakeasies. Of course, never having gone into one, I wouldn't know much about them.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some speakeasies, or I guess that's what you'd call them.
Yeah. Did you ever hear some of the names associated with it?
No, I didn't. I was too young to even, you know, even think about it.
Did your father ever mention the Black Hand?
Yes. Occasionally, you know, he would mention something about the Black Hands. But like I say, once again, I was too young to understand what he was talking about.
Did they ever try and shake him down, do you know? Did he ever say later?
No. No, my dad was just a family man trying to raise a family. And he never had any problems.
What year did he come to Niles?
Oh. I don't really know, Steve. He came here from Italy. Now, see, my mother was born here in Sharon, in Sharpsville. But my dad came here from Italy. But I don't remember. I wouldn't have any idea what year it was.
Whereabouts from Italy did he come from?
Buzzaga.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that tells you. It must be the northern, because my brothers and sisters are all fair. I have one sister who's blue-eyed and blonde. And they say that's characteristic of the north. So it must be the north. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
See, my mom was born here in Sharpsville, Pennsylvania. She went to school here. And although she was Italian, she had no connections with, you know, Italy.
Mm-hmm. While you were here, did anyone ever happen to talk about Jennings?
Not really. Everybody knew Jennings was down there on Mason Street and Wood Street.
How did they regard him? What was the opinion of him?
Oh, I don't know. They had a bingo game there. Nobody much said anything against him or for him.
Mm-hmm. Was he powerful?
Yeah, I would say Jennings was pretty powerful. But nobody really condemned him for anything they'd done or anything. You know, it was just one of those things. They had a place of business there, and that was it.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember anything about the Flask murder?
Flask.
Marty Flass was shot by Chippy Manga.
Yeah. The only thing I remember really is I heard one day that somebody shot Marty Flask. He had a Chrysler with the a Town and Country, and he was driving around Niles. We get up one morning and found out that he was shot. He was killed.
Do you think that the power and the influence politically that Jennings had is gone now, or do other people who kind of took up where he left off still have that influence a little bit?
My own personal opinion, I would have to say that Jennings they're just ordinary people now. Mm-hmm.
But the people who took over after Jennings left the scene, you know, his proteges, in other words, some of them are still around. Do you think they still wield any of that influence that Jennings had?
I doubt it. I'd have my own personal opinion, I doubt it. Mm-hmm.
After you came back from the war, did you see any changes in Niles after the war ended?
Well, when I came back from the war, I was in Youngstown. And I really didn't come into Niles much. I came into Niles when I bought this lot and built a home. I wanted to live here. But see, when I came back from the service, I lived in Youngstown.
Is your wife from Niles?
No, she's from Camel.
I said, when did you get married?
In 1945. Today.
Mm-hmm.
38 years today.
That's pretty good. Do you think, generally speaking, that Niles has improved quite a bit since the post-war years, the way the people are, the way that the town has been?
Yeah, I would say so. I think Niles is a nice community to live in. I like it better than Warren, I like it better than Youngstown, better than Girard. I think it's a good community to live in.
When you were younger, did you remember any police officers or police chiefs?
No, I didn't. There was one. He drove a motorcycle.
Booth?
Yeah, that was him.
Did you know him very well?
Well, I knew of him. That was the only one I knew of.
Why does that name stick in your mind?
Well, I'll tell you why. He was chasing a man of mine who was driving up the avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And she was Irish as Patty Murphy's pig, and she got mad, and she pulled her car right into him.
Hit him?
Yeah. She didn't hurt him, but she pulled her car right into him.
Do you think that the police department today is a little bit more militant than it might have been 30 years ago?
No, on the contrary. I think that the police department today is trying to do a good job. And, of course, there's always some, you know. But the majority of them are pretty nice people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't say that because my son's a policeman. I've met them all. I know them all. And basically, they're all pretty nice fellas. Once in a while, you get a mediocre. But I would say that the department as a whole is made up of some pretty decent fellas.
Mm-hmm. Did you know any of the police chiefs before Chief Ross?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Did you happen to know Ed Karaski? He was shot in 67 at the Holiday Inn.
Karoski? The name seems to ring a bell, but I just can't recall it.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to tell me about Niles? Anything that you might think is interesting that would help us?
Well, I don't really know, Steve. Like I say, I think Niles is a nice community to live in. I think right now they're having a few problems. But I think they'll get them ironed out. Having lived here most of my life, with the exception of a couple of years in Youngstown, I have no quarrel with the way I'm living. Mm-hmm. I think it's a nice town. I like it. I like the people in it. Of course, most of the people in Niles that I know are Italian, and they're Buzlicad the same way as I am. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that makes it pretty nice.
When you were young, did you ever experience any discrimination because of your nationality?
No, not here. No.
I want to ask you one more question. Looking back over the years, who do you think was the best mayor that served in the executive seat?
Well, one that I think was the least partial and tried to do a good job, and I'm a Democrat, a registered Democrat, but he was a Republican. I think it's his name.
DeCristofaro?
No. Well, yeah, DeCristofaro and...
come after DeCristofaro?
Yeah.
Thorpe.
I think DeCristofaro and Thorpe were very fine mayors.
Why would you mention Thorpe?
Well, I think he did a nice job. He tried. And like I say, I'm a registered Democrat and he's a Republican. But I try to look at a fellow like what he's trying to do. And I think the man really tried to do a good job.
What could you say about, how would you sum Cicero's personality? I'm not going to write about him too much because it's more contemporary right now.
Well,
he's a complex person.
Joe Cicero, I've known him for a good many years, and he's always been a very nice, congenial person. I've talked with him, I've been down to his office. I feel a little bit disappointed in this vindictive attitude he's got. Now, it's not like him. So whatever has caused it, I don't know. But it's not like him. Joe has been a nice person. His wife's a nice person. His son and daughter's nice people. But I just detect a little bit of vindictiveness there.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to one other person you mentioned, DeCristofaro. How would you sum up his personality and his terms in office?
Well, I think the man will probably go down in history as one of the best mayors we ever had.
Why?
Well, he kept everything under control.
Can you tell me any more about him?
There was never any outbreaks of... He just kept everything under control. That's the only thing I can tell you.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you can tell me?
No.
Well, I certainly appreciate the time you gave me. Thanks.